Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here once again Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. For a long time now, he's been stopping by on a regular basis on a Monday in the 10 o'clock hour to talk about home maintenance. And this is your opportunity to ask questions. Maybe you have some problem you're not quite sure how to deal with it, or you're thinking of making some changes, doing remodeling, something needs to be fixed, and you have questions, you're not quite sure how to go about it. Well, Hank can help you out. All you'd have to do is pick up the telephone and call us, and we'll give you a chance to ask the questions. 333-9455 is the number here for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means if it would be a long-distance call, we'll pay for the call. So around Illinois and Indiana, in fact, any place in the United States you might be listening, if you're listening on the Internet, you can also use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. So here locally, I guess I should give that number too, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Thank you once again for being here.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Anything in particular you want to mention to folks before we get going here? We have a couple of callers here and we can take them.
Well, one thing that came up on one of my calls that I get at home, be sure and check the condensate drain on your air conditioner. You know, and as humid as it's been, your central air conditioner will produce, probably 3 to 5 gallons of water a day. Now, if that drain plugs, the water runs over into the furnace and into the duct system, and it tends to rust them out. But even worse, it re-evaporates, so you are not controlling the humidity in your house and you're not comfortable. And because it goes through and condenses on the coils that all the air in the house is blowing past, the condensate from an air conditioner can grow algae better than we can in the lab. Therefore, these pipes block up fairly frequently. So it's one of those things we always say, check your filter. By all means, check your filter, but also check that the condensate grain is really working and it's not just dripping into the furnace or the crawl space or the basement or whatever.
All right. Very good. Well, we got a couple callers here ready to go. Let's talk with them. We'll start with someone on a cell phone. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Yes,
hi.
Go ahead.
I'm calling because we've had what we just recently discovered was apparently a long-term leak in our bathroom, and so we're going to need to replace at least the upper level of the floor, if not also the subfloor. And if we're going to have this done, because it's more complicated than we can handle, but I'd like to have a better idea of what that's going to involve before I try to hire someone. So I assume it probably is going to mean taking up the toilet and that sort of thing.
It will mean taking up the toilet. You will have to take up some of the flooring, quite possibly some of the subflooring. And there should be checking under there as to the condition of the floor joists that are supporting it.
Okay.
Usually this kind of thing happens when the wax seal between the toilet and the drain system fails. And it's one of the things that I know at least one of the big box stores, when you set your toilet, you should caulk the thing to the floor. Never caulk the thing to the floor, because that way if you have a leak, it will never show up. You'll never see it.
Right.
If you don't caulk it to the floor, at least it will come out from underneath, and you'll realize there's a problem before the toilet goes through the floor. But what you're talking about is a fairly major project. You're definitely going to have to replace flooring, quite possibly subflooring, and occasionally we'll have to get into the joists that support the subfloor.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call then. Nothing else you would want to add to that?
No, I don't think so. The wax seals are cheap. It's just people, you never realize they're leaking until they've already done their damage.
Yeah. How many years would you expect to get out of one?
It all depends. We're talking about a 2-pound chunk of beeswax with the toilet sitting into it, and if anything is flexible so that it moves a little bit, then we can get the leak. Otherwise, 15 years or so, probably.
Okay. All right. Let's go to another caller here. Whiteheath, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I have a cement patio, and I was wondering if there's any kind of finish you can put on that so that this green algae or whatever it is doesn't build up on it so much.
Well, about the only thing you can do, basically, it means your patio is shaded, so
yes,
we're not getting much sunlight there.
No, no.
Scrub it down with a little, say, one part of household bleach to a quarter to 4 parts of water, something like this. That probably does as much as anything else. Any coating that you put on isn't going to keep the algae from growing.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, if you want, so it's easier to clean. Yes, there are a number of epoxy concrete paints that will give you a much slicker surface, but almost too slick.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So just some Clorox or whatever.
Clorox and
water. And do that like once a week or something? Or?
Oh, I don't think you should have to do it probably more than once a month, depending upon the circumstances.
All right, good. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And to another caller here, this would be Urbana and line number three. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have my washing machine in the basement, and the water is emptying into the left side of a two-tub system, but when the tub gets full of water on the left side, it comes up on the right side, and it's very muddy. So does this mean there's a leak someplace outside? And if so, how do I know, and who does it need to be fixed? And what
well,
kind of
no, it, in all probability, your drain is running a little bit slow. And let's face it, a washing machine pumps out water at a great rate, so if the drain is not completely open, yes, it will build up, and since the two sides are connected underneath the tub, if one side fills, the other side is going to start filling as well.
So should I put some kind of...
put some Drano or whatever variety of things you use, put that down there. If it's bad enough, it may have to have a snake run down it to knock loose any soap scum and so on that's built up over the years.
Okay, so I should start with just Drano kind of stuff.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. Our guest here this morning is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program once a month. It's always Monday to talk about home maintenance. And questions, whatever questions you have, you can give us a call. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. They do, if you go down to the hardware store, they do sell snake-type devices that are made for the homeowner.
Yes.
And then, of course, the professionals, they go up several notches in terms of the kind of stuff that they can do. So how much can you do yourself, and how do you know if it's something that it's beyond one of these little things that you can buy yourself and you really need to call a pro?
You don't really know until you've tried it. But certainly, considering what plumbers charge, it's worth trying the do-it-yourself job. It all depends on what the problem is. And we don't usually have too much problem with laundry drains because of the amount of detergent and hot water that goes down them. So there may be something somewhere that's cutting in, but basically that's not it. You know, it's the same way your kitchen sink drain works much better if you have a dishwasher, because you know the amount of hot water and the amount of very potent detergent that the dishwasher puts into it. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, you can clean them out pretty well if you're reasonably skilled at what you're doing. If not, you may need to get a plumber to come in and take the trap apart or something.
Yeah. How much of the problem does end up in that in the trap, in that little U-shaped piece of pipe?
Oh, probably 80% of it.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, we have several callers. In fact, the lines are full, so we'll get right to them and start out with, I believe, caller in Bement, line number one. Hello.
Hi, this is Don calling. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Good, and I've got a house with a fireplace in the living room. And in the fireplace, the previous owner put a wood-burning stove that vents out through the top into the chimney.
Right.
And I'd like to get rid of that wood-burning stove and revert that back to a natural fireplace. I'm wondering what's involved in that and how I make sure that it's safe to use the fire in that.
Well, basically, it's just a matter of taking the wood-burning stove out and checking the flue that it's clean when you get done and that you have an appropriate damper there, because they may have taken the damper out when they put the stove in.
Okay.
So, and we don't want to be venting house air that you paid to heat up the flue all winter.
Right.
So you want to be...
Okay, go ahead.
You want to be sure that that damper is there and working and so on. And if your chimney is relatively clean, you should be in good shape.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I guess, you would say you'd still want to make sure that the chimney is lined somehow.
Well, it's less important that it be lined for a fireplace than for anything else.
Oh, okay. So you don't get that acidic buildup that you do if you're putting natural gas.
That's right.
Vent
any that is running on natural gas really needs to be lined, but the fireplace flue is much less important.
Okay. And if for example, though, that say the furnace, a gas furnace or a gas water heater was vented into this chimney,
Then it definitely has to be lined, but actually that would be illegal.
Oh, well, of course, that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen.
But generally speaking, when they have that kind of a situation, there are multiple flues within the, quote, chimney, unquote, structure.
I see.
So you need the gas going into one flue and the other fuels going into the other flue.
All right. Okay. Well, let's go here to line number two. This would be Urbana. Hello.
Hi. You didn't say how to clean out the... Condensate drain if it gets clogged.
Well, many of the installers are putting a T in the pipe where it comes out of the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, about every 2 weeks, dump a tablespoon of Clorox down it to kill off the algae that are growing there. Otherwise, you may have to take a piece of pipe apart and run a small snake through it to dislodge everything that's in there.
Okay.
But if you have that elbow, instead of an elbow, they came out of the furnace with a T, which they very often do, you can stick a cork in the top of it. Otherwise, and then every couple of weeks, you run a little Clorox in it, and that kills off the algae growing in the pipe.
Oh, okay. Second question. Can you use things like Drano in a septic system?
Yes.
Without killing off the...
Yes,
bacteria?
Certainly can.
Okay, and bleach as well?
Moderate limits of bleach.
Okay.
It's not something I would want to dump down, and I don't really like the idea of the chemicals like they use in RVs or something like that. That's pretty much capable of killing the bacteria, but otherwise, yes, no problem.
Okay, thanks.
All right, and we'll go next to, let me see, Indiana, line four. Hello.
Hello. I'm interested in the sounds that one hears when, after you've had a bath, you unplug it. And I know everything's interconnected eventually to a main drain pipe. So I've purchased some bottles or, you know, plastic containers of, call it Drano. It's mm-hmm. Generic one. And I was wondering how often one should use these, and when is there a best time? They talk about using hot water, but I'm particularly concerned about my wife took a bath and did the drain, and I was in the kitchen. This is a small house, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden I heard it bloop 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 bloop, you know, like that, and then eventually died off. But there were still some more sounds, but they were further apart.
Okay.
And I immediately had visions of some mucus substance. You know, it's like a web or something that the water gets through. Then when it gets through, the air compresses and makes that sound. But I really don't know what's going on. So I'd like some information on those sounds and whether or not they are predictors for problems to come or something should be done.
Well, not necessarily. It means that probably the plumber didn't put in the venting system quite
okay.
the way he should have.
Well, this is a rental, and the fellow that he's now dead, but he did a lot of work, and we've since discovered that work in quotes is the best way to put it. So I'm a little concerned about we've been here for a while, but the system does make this noise from time to time. And there was one time when we had to use a fair amount of the Drano type stuff to get something unplugged, but it worked, and haven't had any particular problems since then. Everything seems to drain pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering about, you know, sort of, you know, getting ahead of the game, so to speak, how often one should do this. And I figure, you know, we're going to be entering the fall, and the winter might be a good time to be doing some things. So I thought I'd ask you about, you know, what do you do, and what do you listen to, and what do you look for?
Well, basically, as I say, it sounds as though the venting system is not working properly, is not connected quite the way it's supposed to be. And on tubs, that's not really unusual.
Okay.
Is it hurting anything? No. Other than the fact that it's making a racket that will wake the dead. But no, I won't say that it's a predictor of a major problem.
Okay. Now, if you use the Drano-type substance, should you do each, drain, so to speak, individually at a time, or can you do them all at the same time, or what is the better?
I just use it when you had a drain that was running slow.
Okay. If the drain's going down?
Doing fine. Leave it alone.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. We'll go next to a caller in Oakland, line number 3 right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Back to the septic tanks.
Sure.
Is this Rid-X and that kind of stuff, should that be used or not? I mean, is it really valuable?
It's a great waste of money.
Okay. I have another question about septic tanks. I have two more, actually. Mac, the lady said bleach and so on. We use, because of certain conditions, we use, or my wife uses, portable cleaner on a daily basis. Is that harmful?
No, that shouldn't be a problem.
All right, third question. How about, she's thinking about putting in a water softening system. That means salt. How about salt?
You should never run the discharge from a water softening back flush system into the septic tank.
Okay.
The softened water is not a problem. It's when you're recharging the water softener. We don't want that water to go into the septic tank.
Okay, Hank. Thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go on here. Next caller is in Chicago, line number 1.
Thank you.
Yes.
I heard Paul Harvey advertising a new water heater called a Renai. Have you had an experience with that? I understand it's part of the space age technology. It's about the size of a suitcase and gives you hot water on demand.
Well, okay. Basically, you are heating it as you are using it, as versus heating the water in a tank. This means that the temperature of the water going out varies with how fast it's going through. In other words, you had a couple of faucets going at the same time, the water temperature might not nearly be as hot as you expect it to be.
Well, thank you. The next question is similar to the very first caller regarding a toilet bowl leakage around the base, and we've had that occur twice until they finally have set it properly this last time. But the water that leaked out, I'm wondering about the seepage into the flooring, as they referred to it, and we've noticed some outside of the bathroom area where we have carpeting that the carpeting is now wet. So I'm wondering if we've incurred some damage through that.
You probably have. You should not be seeing a carpeting wet anywhere close to it.
Yeah. Another one is related to some new tenants that moved into the apartment above us, and without commenting too much about their personal characteristics, except that they're exceptionally obese. And I'm wondering how much weight a person can really sit on a toilet with these days. What are those things meant to hold up before something starts happening?
Well, most of them are designed to take 300 pounds without a problem. Now, there are 3 or 4 different brands on the market that are designed to hold people up to 1,000 pounds, but they are special units.
Of course. The other thing was, unfortunately, with their particular size, I don't know, relative to the small bathtub and that, they were showering seemingly beyond the bathtub and had parquet wooden floors installed all over the apartment, and water has started to leak from some of their bathing experiences into our ceiling area and causing seepage in that. So I think we've got a problem here that...
You certainly do. Now, there are two possibilities. What is the shower surround? Is it ceramic tile or what? You can get an unbelievable amount of water through a hairline crack in the grout in a ceramic tile shower.
Yeah, we're discovering that.
And so that is the possibility. The other thing is there could be a drain leak, or they may not close the shower curtain all the way.
That's possibly too, yeah. They are large. Well, okay, thank you. We'll probably have to do some repair, and then we'll call you up about it. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Just to return for a second to the subject of on-demand water heaters.
Yes.
We've talked about that before, and particularly how that's... you know, say you have a bathroom in an addition and it's a long way from the water heater, that might be the kind of thing that you
that
would want
might,
to use.
Might be the thing, particularly since you're probably feeding that on-demand water heater from your regular water heater. So what we're doing is topping it off to consider the heat loss.
But it sounds like it's not the kind of thing that it's not really a practical alternative to the traditional water heater.
Well, yes, it can be. Depends on where.
Yep. Yeah.
As you may know, I do a lot of work in Colorado, and we can't use them out there because the incoming water is so cold that there isn't enough heat gain to be warm enough for a shower for the most part. See, around here, our water is coming in around in the mid-50s, between 50 and 55 degrees. Out there, it comes in at 34 degrees. Well, you are limited to perhaps a 50-degree rise through one of these things. And when it's 50, that means you get to 100, you get a nice shower. Out there, you raise the 34 degrees, 50 degrees, and you'll freeze to death in the shower. So it all depends upon the situation and how big a unit you put in and this sort of thing. Much depends on the type of unit, whether you're really saving anything or not. If you have a gas-fired instantaneous water heater that uses a pilot light, you probably are not saving a thing. If you have electric ignition, you may be.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, the insulation in our tank-type water heaters these days is good enough that the pilot light will maintain it. As a matter of fact, we've checked a number of them where they're warmer in the morning than they are when you went to bed at night because the pilot light produced more heat than they lost.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely have some possibilities. One of the major advantages is they don't take much space. You can mount the thing on the wall in some out-of-the-way place. And as I say, as boosters with the bathroom at the far end of the house, certainly that's a possibility. Usually we use electric ones for that.
Yeah. All right. We're at our midpoint here. Hank Spies is our guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program every month, always on the third Monday, if we're on a regular schedule, the third Monday in the 10 o'clock hour. And if you have questions about home maintenance, he will do his best to help you out. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Charleston, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I have a laundry room that doesn't have any outside walls, and I've had trouble with the dryer vent becoming plugged up. And what we did is we replaced it with one of those I don't know what you'd call it, the ventless vent or whatever, that or filter that has the water in it. It's got kind of a baffle system.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm wondering how effective that is. And then I'm also wondering if there's some sort of booster exhaust fan that I could put on the actual vent line from the dryer.
Well, there are booster fans that can go on, and any heating contractor should be familiar with those because we often use them in ductwork for furnaces in large houses. As far as your ventless dryer is concerned, without any question, you are raising the humidity in the house drastically and maybe to the extent of causing a problem.
Okay.
So I would never have a dryer that did not vent outside.
Okay. But you say there are exhaust fans then that could be installed?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
And the other thing is to use smooth metal ductwork, not this corrugated stuff, because there's much less back pressure on the fan with a smooth duct.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Next is someone else here in Chicago this morning, line 3. Hello.
This is in Champaign.
Oh, pardon me. Go ahead.
Okay. I had a question about, we have a crawl space, and the crawl space is attached to a little tornado room about 10 by 10. And the crawl space has four of those slot vents in it, but lately it has been smelling exceedingly musty and coming up through the entrance into the tornado room. And we were wondering if there anything we could do to lessen the aroma. I mean, there's plastic down, there's pea gravel down, there's all the prerequisites.
The plastic over the pea gravel or under it?
Under it.
It should be over it.
Over it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because this means that once any moisture from any source gets into that gravel, it can't soak in. All it can do is re-evaporate or grow algae.
Okay, so we need to put plastic over the top of it?
Yeah, and be sure that you perforate the one that's there or pull it out or something, because if we have two layers of plastic with moisture between them, we can grow some very interesting biology projects.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay. On to someone here, Champaign-Urbana, I think, line number 1. Hello.
Hi, interesting. It's about electric motor. It used to run okay. It looks like it's pretty old, about 4x6, maybe a quarter to a half horsepower. But recently, every time it starts, it hums for a long time, and then it gets turning okay.
I suspect you've got a bad bearing in there someplace. And considering what it costs to get them fixed, it's cheaper usually to throw them away and get a new one.
Right. Grazie.
All right. Well, let's go on. Next is Normal, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking this call.
Sure.
Hank, I'm having to have a 20x20-foot addition room re-roofed. And it's cathedral ceilings inside, and I've had two ideas from different contractors. One is to put a ridge vent. The other one says it wouldn't do any good if the insulation is packed up next to the roof. Can you give me any hint on that?
Well, if they really stuffed the insulation in tight, it isn't going to do much good. However, generally speaking, it's not usually stuffed in that time. It's usually blown in, and moisture moves through it fairly well. You do, in addition to the ridge vent, need some soffit vents. In other words, some at the lower edge of the roof.
Yeah, they are there.
They're there. Uh-huh. Okay. I would. You have
they're
nothing
there
to.
They're on the overhang. Underneath of the soffit.
Right. Okay. I would put the ridge vent on. You have absolutely nothing to lose.
Okay.
By doing so.
Okay, and thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Right.
So if you, and we've talked about probably quite a lot over the years about attic venting, and I know that you really, you like the ridge vent as opposed to the other kinds of single vents that are punched through the roof. But if you're going to have that ridge, do you have to have soffit vents?
If you want it to work, you do.
All right. So if it won't provide the proper ventilation.
It will not do much.
So you have to have some place for it to draw the air up, so it comes up and through.
I mean, we're moving air on basis of density. As it warms up, it rises. Okay, so we're letting it in at the lower edge of the roof. As the sun is shining on the roof, it warms up. We're letting it out the top. If there's no way of getting cool air in from the bottom, you're not going to get much air circulation. So, they say now, when it comes to moisture, we have a different thing in that moisture will move by vapor pressure as versus air movement. So that it will go any place that air can go, but it may even go in the opposite direction. So we're certainly allowing moisture out with the ridge vent, but you may not get much change in attic temperature and reduce the air conditioning load. if you don't have a lower intake.
Okay. And how much for, is there some sort of rule of thumb about how much soffit vent area you should have for how much square foot the roof is?
You should have total vent, and you'll find on the ridge vent it's so many square inches per running foot or whatever it is. The total vent should be at least 1/300th of the ceiling area. So for every 300 square feet of ceiling, we need 100 square inches of, or 1 square inch, I'm sorry, of vent. So that's usually the minimum. We prefer 1 square inch for every 150 square inches, but 300 is the minimum. If you can get by with the 300 if you have a plastic vapor barrier in the ceiling. If you don't have it, you need 1:150 ratio.
Okay. To another caller here, someone on cell phone, line number 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I have another question about dryer vents. I've seen these brush tools that you can use to run down the dryer vent to take out the lint with the claim that the lint can cause a dryer fire. And I want to know, is that true? Can you get lint in your dryer vent that can end up causing a fire? And the tools I've seen are for the lint collectors that are on top of the dryer as opposed to the ones that are in the door of the dryer that go down, but access them through the door of the dryer. And so my second question is, are those tools used, can you use those tools in those kinds of collectors, or do you have
not,
to actually?
Not usually. There is a filter in that door.
Right, and yes, and I have one.
You have to change that periodically.
Yes.
But otherwise, no, the tool that you're talking about is designed because you still, even with the thing in the door, you have a dryer vent that's coming off the back of the dryer normally.
Right. Uh-huh.
And the tool that you're talking about is sold for cleaning that vent out the back.
Correct, right. And is that just a gimmick or is that necessary?
It depends a lot on your ductwork. If you have smooth ductwork, there may not be much need for it. If you use the usual corrugated flexible duct, yes, it will collect considerable amounts of lint. As far as it causing a fire, it would be very rare. If you had an electric dryer, if you have a gas dryer, it's possible.
Okay, a gas dryer is possible. With electric dryer, it's rare.
Yeah,
so
but now
you
it
have
reduces
an electric
the
dryer. Should you still go ahead and try to clean out?
Yes, because it decreases the efficiency of the dryer significantly.
Approximately how often should you do that? I have dogs, so I tend to have a lot of lint in my stuff.
Familiar with the problem. At least once a year, twice a year wouldn't be a bad idea.
Okay, and you just detach it from the back of the dryer then?
Yes.
And do whatever necessary.
And vacuum out, stick your vacuum hose in, anything that's in the dryer, and then as well as brushing it through.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. So if you were going to do that, is most, I would guess that the greatest concentration of lint would be closest to the dryer. And as you got further and further away, that you would have less.
That is probably true, but it's surprising how much gets all the way through. For instance, I have mine coming through a window, and there is a screen on that window, and I have to clean the window screen on a regular basis.
Oh,
So there's still quite a bit. And it's amazing how much dryer lint we find when the dryer discharge is behind the air conditioner. And all the crud gets pulled into the coils and the air conditioner quits working efficiently.
Yeah, okay. So it's probably good if you can help it, don't locate those two things close to each other.
Absolutely. We should not have the dryer vent near the air conditioner.
All right. Well, we got about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and certainly we can take more questions. Hank Spies is our guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service, and he is on the program once a month, and we talk about home maintenance, the kind of questions we've been taking here so far. I'm sure that there are other folks who have questions, so just give us a call here in Champaign-Urbana, 833-9455. That's the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. To another caller here. This is someone in Champaign, and line one. Hello. Yes.
I have a question about gutters and downpipe maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
I've inherited a house that was built in 39, and until a few years ago, it was very well maintained. But I know that the gutters have not been cleaned out as often as they need to be, and the drain pipes drain down into tiles in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, how far down should I be concerned about them being plugged up?
They can be plugged up any place. A house that old, the odds are pretty good that somewhere along the line the tiles have collapsed.
Okay, that's what someone mentioned to me. And should I have someone inspect?
You can do that, or else cut the downspout off about a foot above the ground, put an elbow on it, and put at least a 5-foot extension out so the water runs away from the house.
Okay.
And don't worry about the tile anymore.
Right. If it's still functioning okay, then I don't need to worry about it, right?
Right.
Okay.
And usually this lack of function will show up as water seepage in the basement.
Okay. There's none whatsoever.
Okay. In that case, it's apparently still working.
Okay. And about how often should gutters be cleaned? I know it depends on trees around that sort of thing. Is it spring and fall? Is that more or less enough? Or?
Well, most of the time you can also get various gutter guards that will keep most of the leaves out. None of them are 100% effective.
Okay.
But that can reduce the amount of time and the amount of climbing you have to do to keep them clean. But at an absolute minimum, when the leaves are finished falling in the fall,
okay.
And if you are unfortunate enough to have the elm trees that produce these little spinners in the springtime, you better clean them after those have quit flying as well.
And maples do the same thing, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. The things you mentioned to put in to prevent leaves from collecting, a friend has had gutter helmets put on, and I don't know if they were not put on properly or not, but the water doesn't really drain down into the drain pipes completely. And she said problem with water in the basement. Is that the type to put on that runs along the entire drain pipe, the gutter? Or
yes, that is not my favorite brand of them by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay.
But
or would it be better to put something just where it goes into the drain pipe?
Certainly you can put in these little screened inserts where it goes into the drain pipe, much less expensive.
Right.
But basically, it all depends on how much of a problem you have.
Okay, there are a lot of big trees around.
You have lots of big trees, and you probably want to have some one of the systems that get most of the leaves away. But you want one where that they're hinged or something or other, because you still may need to clean them.
Okay, and how would I investigate what are the best types to get?
You give your mailing address to the engineer. We'll take it here for you in just a minute,
okay. And
I'll mail you something.
Wonderful. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Well, then we'll put you back on hold on line number one, and then if Henry, our guy in the control room, can get your address, we'll pass it on to Mr. Spies. All right. Very good. Let us continue here. Next is someone in Champaign. Both callers are in Champaign. We'll go first to line number two. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'd like some information about how you get or remove paint from a driveway. My son has a concrete driveway, and apparently there's a sealer that's been put over it. Is there any way to get to remove the sealer and the paint and get just down to the concrete color?
Okay, I have no idea what the sealer may be, and how you do it depends an awful lot on what it is.
Okay.
So I would figure that you're going to have to do some spot checking. Most of the paint stores have removers of that kind, and you may want to get just a little bit and spot check it someplace and figure out whether that's picking it up or not.
Uh-huh. But do they have them that actually do take off the sealer as well?
It depends on what the sealer is.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to have to try. A paint remover should take the sealer.
A paint remover should do that. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. And line three, then, is also Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I manage a lot of apartments, so just listening to your show, I had a couple comments on the dryer vent clogging. One is the comment was made they clog closer to the dryer, but they also clog wherever there's a bend in the line is where they tend to build up. But the issue of the fire, we've actually had dryer fires in electric dryers. But what happens is if the vent gets clogged, then the buildup builds up in the dryer.
In the dryer, right.
If that gets a coil, then you very easily could have a fire. So
you won't have one in starting in the ductwork.
Not in the ductwork, but you very easily could have it.
You can have one in the dryer. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. So again, I guess that just underscores the need to. It's at least once a year. It would be a good idea to do that. But then I suppose the problem is for some people that's going to mean you got to wrestle the dryer. You got to maybe move it away from the wall.
Unfortunately, that is true.
You got to take the vent off from the back of the dryer so that you can get it. So it's not – for some people, it might be a kind of a major undertaking. That's the only big problem there.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've seen a little pickup truck running around here advertising dryer duct cleaning services.
Really? So you might look in the phone book and see if they listen to the phone book.
Might see whether it's available.
All right. We continue here. Next is back again, another Champagne caller. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I was calling because we have a basement that's a half basement, and we have exposed crawl space. And I've had people mention to me that there can be mold problems. And I'm wondering if there's anything that can be done to prevent those.
The main thing to do is to be sure that all of the dirt surface is covered with a layer of plastic.
Okay.
And as long as the moisture is under the plastic, it's not going to hurt anything.
Okay.
It's when it can evaporate up into the house that it produces mold problems.
Okay. So we should get back in that crawl space and make sure that there's plastic down on top of all that gravel.
Yes. And if there's plastic under the gravel, then we need to punch holes in that so we don't trap water between the two.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks so
much. Thank you. What does it matter how thick the plastic sheeting that you use is?
Not really. Usually it's 4 or 6 mil. The heavier it is, the less likely it is to be damaged when you get down there for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little easier. The thicker stuff is a little easier to handle. Otherwise, no, it doesn't make any difference as to what the thickness is.
So have you seen crawl spaces where there's been dirt, then they put plastic on top of that, and then they put gravel on top of that? Does that happen frequently?
That's fairly frequent. I'm not quite sure why they figure that's the way to do it, but one of the things is that the builder feels that he puts gravel over it, it protects the plastic during the construction process.
Well, I suppose it does.
Yeah, but the real problem then is once you get any water in there, it absorbs into the gravel and cannot soak down. So the only place it can go is back through the house.
Yeah, okay. So again, though, to make sure that people understand, if that's the situation that they've got, they need to put another layer of plastic, cover that gravel, but make sure that they punch some holes in the...
Lots of holes. Or better, the best thing to do is to... pick the old
take
plastic
up.
That's a royal pain.
Yeah, okay.
But if there is one thing that probably would solve more problems than anything else in the housing industry is to be sure that there is no exposed dirt anywhere, that it is all covered with plastic.
Mm-hmm.
I know the people who claim, my crawl space is dusty dry. Why do I need it? Well, the reason it's dusty dry is the fact that the moisture is evaporating. Generally speaking, a, quote, dry, unquote, crawl space can evaporate 2 to 5 gallons of water per day per 1,000 square feet. And it goes up through the house. And it, strange as it may seem, the first place the problems occur is in the roof.
Mm-hmm.
As far from the crawl spaces you can get. But generally speaking, in the wintertime, that is the coldest surface, is the bottom of the roof.
And it's going to condense.
And it's going to condense. And that's exactly what happens. And, we've known about this for 60 years, but that doesn't mean that we have convinced all builders that's the way it's supposed to be done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we certainly have time for some other questions, at least a good 5 minutes here. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Since we had a couple toilet questions, I guess I'm thinking about for people who have older toilets and are particularly thinking about the amount of water that they use. And we've talked about the fact that some older toilets can use, what, 6-7 gallons?
Yeah, usually 4 to 5. Anyway.
4 or 5 gallons at a flush, and some of the newer designs maybe as little as, what, 2?
Actually, 1.5.
Even standard. Less. So that can be a depending on how much flushing you do, that can be a significant amount of water savings between the
right.
two.
Right, it certainly can be. It's probably less of a problem in Illinois than it is in a lot of places, but there's an awful lot of places where you can't put in any other kind. You have to go with the low flow because they don't have the water to use.
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you were thinking about doing that, thinking about looking for a toilet that's going to use less water, anything in particular that you want to keep in mind when you're out there looking?
Well, I think right now virtually all the toilets made only use 1.6 gallons as a maximum. But there is considerable difference as to how efficiently they flush with that lower flow. I hate to get into brands, but there's a Japanese one that is made by Toyo, T-O-Y-O, that is excellent, but it's also 2 to 3 times the cost of many of the others. You get what you pay for.
All right. Well, we have some other calls here. I want to try and make sure that we get them in. And I think that they're both in Champaign. Line number 1 in Champaign, I think. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, hi.
We have a front porch and a gutter attached to it. And it looks like the water is coming in between the wood and the gutter. Even though it's not raining very hard, it's not like the gutter's overflowing. And I had heard that you need a gutter apron, and I'm not sure one is installed. Is it possible to retrofit a gutter apron between the shingles?
Well, what you really need is a drip edge extends into the gutter.
Okay.
In other words, the drip edge slides under the bottom row of shingles, and the gutter tucks in under it.
Okay.
And
is
that
something I could do without replacing the shingles or the roofing?
I would think you should be able to do it without replacing the shingles. You're probably going to have to take gutter off to do it.
Okay. We had the gutter replaced thinking that it was a problem with the gutter, but it's the drip edge.
It's probably that drip edge not being tucked back under there, and we have water coming in. Now, it's also possible if the shingles aren't done right that we can get water coming from under the drip edge.
Okay.
And that would be doing that too, but
and that would involve re-roofing.
That would involve some redoing of the roof edge, at least.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. To line 2, I think this is also Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I had one question about applying wood preservative to a screen house outside, and one question about a newly converted basement. The question about the screen house is, first, we applied the wood preservative throughout the inside as well as the outside on the assumption that there could still be warping of boards or something
Certainly.
Else going wrong. But that was an awful lot of surface. We're just about done with the job now, but there's rafters in there and a ceiling and everything, and I'm wondering if there's any easier way of doing that than what we did, which was more or less with a small applicator and a brush.
Probably not. You could have used pressure-treated wood to begin with.
We did, yeah.
Well, in that case, you don't really need anything else.
Okay. And the question about the basement is one that probably should have been asked at the beginning, but when we converted it, we put quite a bit of resources into it, and we were concerned about any sort of water coming in for any reason, even though we have not had problems in the past. And they put in something called an ejection pit, which they said, in effect, would kind of close off the plumbing system in the basement from outside, the various sewer sort of networks. And I'm wondering, I realize now, I'm not sure exactly what an ejection pit is and how effective those are.
Well, generally speaking, we put in a sewage ejection pump, which would have all of the toilets and other water usage drains hooked to it, and then that pumps it up and out.
I see.
And, yes, they work fine. Whether it was necessary or whether your old gravity drain was still working well without it is open to question.
Mm-hmm. And does this apply? Mm-hmm. You've just been talking about sewage, but I was wondering about the storm sewer.
Okay, that should never be hooked to a sewer system. That should be pumped up and out to either the storm sewer or out to the soil surface, the lawn, where the water will continue to run away.
Okay. Okay. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, we'd see if we do one more. I think this is Tuscola, line three. Hello.
Yes, I had a question on radon. If you're wanting to improve your basement and you have a radon that's high, what can
How
be
high?
Done? What?
How high?
Well, I'm just saying I'm going to run a test, and I was wondering if I did come into that situation, what would I do to alleviate it, and is that expensive?
It can be. It can be alleviated, but I would not, I'd be looking to see how high it was before I would even consider what to do.
All right.
Generally speaking, the EPA's, quote, level of concern, unquote, is 4 picocuries per liter.
Okay.
This was a number that was picked out of midair with no scientific basis. In Canada, that number is 20. And there's a big difference in the number of houses that are higher than 4 and lower than 20.
I see.
I personally would not get excited about anything below 15.
Oh.
We have spent billions of dollars in this country trying to pull radon levels down to a point, a nonsensical level.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, thanks for the call. We're going to have to stop because we've used up our time. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Spies, for being here once again.
You're very welcome.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service, always here on the third Monday at 10 o'clock to talk about home maintenance.